Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell, and alongside me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Hannah Bookdoll. Good evening, Hannah.
Good evening, Charlie.
Hannah, I saw a film this week.
Did you?
And in it, the two lead protagonists, usually teammates, fight each other. It's called Batman vs. Superman.
Sounds like Cinema Clash.
I'm kidding. It's not Batman vs. Superman. It's Captain America's Civil War, Hannah.
Yes, I saw it too.
A new Marvel movie.
An excellent Marvel movie.
A Marvel movie.
A great Marvel movie.
I am now saturated by Marvel movies.
A Marvel movie in the tradition of Marvel movies that are just plain fun to watch.
My Marvel cuppeth runneth over. I've been Marveled out.
I have not been Marveled out. I think anybody who enjoys Marvel movies is going to be quite happy with this one.
It's at 92% on the tomato meter.
There's a reason for that.
The crowd was wearing Captain America attire. They were giddy. They were jittery. Yep. They clapped through the movie. They clapped at the end, and I was like a stick in the mud.
You are. You're that 8% outers.
I don't hate it. But man, I'm tired of it. I'm so tired of it.
Oh, that's sad because it's so rare to have that kind of energy in a theater and to be able to just enjoy watching a movie with people who are just excited to see it. It doesn't have that oppressive darkness of the DC Comics Batman versus Superman type of movie. It's just plain entertaining to see. And the characters are just fun to revisit. So what you see as no character development or character growth, I see as an opportunity to revisit with characters that are just fun to watch.
You know, in a sense, that sounds like a TV series. And this almost feels like a TV show. They grow over time. They each have their own different arcs and through different episodes. And we revisit them so often now, it's kind of like a weekly drama comedy.
But it's not weekly, and so we don't see them that often. Granted, you know what you're going to get when you get into one of these Marvel movies. And this is an Avengers movie as much as it is a Captain America movie, without a doubt. And that's why I really like it. I like the Avengers movies generally more than those individual characters movies. Because I love watching the interplay of all these different characters. And so this movie definitely falls more in the Avengers realm than just a plain old Captain America realm.
And because of that, it feels like an installment. The first Captain America, the first Avenger, like 2011, it was just him versus Red Skull. A couple years later, Captain America the Winter Soldier, it was him versus the Winter Soldier, and Black Widow was in it. Mm-hmm. And now, I don't know why they call it Captain America. It's an Avengers movie. Everybody's in it except Thor and the Hulk.
Yeah, it definitely is an Avengers movie. I think it's called Captain America just because the trigger for the storyline is basically Captain America. It's, you know, the team of Avengers gets divided ultimately over, you know, the friendship that Captain America has with this guy who was frozen in time back in the day when he was and was brainwashed into doing some really evil things. And Captain America still sees a piece of his old friend in this villain. And I think that's why it's sort of a Captain America-driven story, but with all these other characters taking part.
Well, we learn in the last film, he's a villain in that, but he's not a villain by choice. Mm-hmm. He's a villain by brainwashing. He's a normal guy underneath it all. But, you know, slap on his metal arm, call him the Winter Soldier. By the way, he's played by Sebastian Stan, and he's really good, actually. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the trigger. Captain America, Steve Rogers, played by Chris Evans, mm-hmm. very physically fit gentleman.
Great biceps. As
he in the first two films, he's kind of the leader of the Avengers, but he's a Boy Scout. He is a goody two-shoes. So when the conflict arises, the United Nations wants to establish civilian oversight over the Avengers. The Avengers thank you for saving the world a couple of times, but while you're doing that, you're killing a lot of civilians. A lot of civilians. A lot of collateral damage. A lot of innocent victims. So the United Nations says, here's some laws. Here's some rules. We're gonna own you. We're going to send you out. And Iron Man says, cool. I'm fine. Let's do it. Because he's got a guilty conscience. Captain America says, no way, man. I'm a libertarian. Don't you, don't threaten my sovereignty. And I thought they had it backwards. Captain America normally would be the guy to sign over the sign that law, and Iron Man should be the guy who's saying go away.
Absolutely, but I think that's what sort of turns this plot a little bit on its head in a good way, because that's exactly what I think everyone would have expected. And to see Iron Man being the one, Tony Stark being the one who's got this this burden of conscience about the collateral damage that they've caused, and wanting to sort of feel that they did need to be reined in and they did need to have some checks and balances. It was interesting, but then you go back to really the type of guy that Captain Rogers is, Captain America, and you realize that he, you know, he comes from an era that you do what's morally right, and you're trusted to do what's morally right. And he doesn't want to relinquish his moral choices to somebody else. And so it does actually make some sense. But yes, the biggest difference is you don't expect Iron Man to be the one to follow the rules.
Not at all. So that one was a little weird. But, you know, it's all right that they try to switch it up. That's fine. Yeah. Let's talk about the new characters. There are two big new characters, and they're all over the preview, so this is not spoilers. The biggest one is probably Black Panther, mm-hmm. and he's played by Chadwick Boseman. You remember him. He was Jackie Robinson in 42. He was James Brown in Get On Up. So a man of the biopics, now he is Black Panther. Mm-hmm. I did not take to Black Panther. He comes off as the Avengers' Catwoman. I just expect him to go, he pops these little claws out of his fingertips. He scratches up some people. I'm not feeling Black Panther, Hannah.
Well, I don't feel much of him in this movie. I think it's an introduction, and that's what it feels like. It feels that there are these introductions peppered throughout in order to set up whatever those next installments of the franchise might be. And so he was good. I'm not sure he'd carry a movie all that well as his own individual character. But he added, you know, his character was needed to sort of drive the plot a little bit. But one of my favorites, though, is just the, this is also not a spoiler, I don't think, because it is in the previews as well, is we do see a young Spider-Man also emerge in this one. And it was fun. It was a fun thing.
Extremely tired of new Spider-Men. What was wrong with Tobey Maguire? And then what was wrong with Andrew Garfield?
They got old.
Well, Andrew Garfield was old to begin with. He was already like 30 on that first one. But yeah. There's so many new Spider-Men now. It's like Batman from the mid to late 90s when there was a new Batman every movie. So I'm tired of new Spider-Men. This guy knew about the age thing. They started young. This kid, Tom Holland, he's like 19. Yeah. He was the kid in The Heart of the Sea.
Oh, okay.
You know, the main protagonist kid. Remember when he mm-hmm. had to go inside the whale? That kid.
Right.
Yeah.
He's good.
Fine.
It's an entertaining aspect to the whole...
He's not deep. He's there to laugh at, really.
Absolutely. He's there for comic relief. But again, that's what I love about these Avengers movies, is that even though there's this sort of strong moral overtone to the story, and it does have a very similar plot to Batman versus Superman, where there's, you know, political implications for whether these guys are heroes or vigilantes. What differentiates the Avengers movies is just simply that they are not oppressive, they're lighter, and they manage to walk a very fine line between providing some drama and some humor. And it's just a fun, enjoyable, big screen movie to watch. And you want to see it with other people. It's not one that you should just wait and rent. Because part of the fun of this is seeing it on a big screen with other people who are excited to be there. And you just feel that energy.
Well, except for those awful 3D glasses. Man, those hurt after a while.
No, the 3D was not useful at all. In fact, I did feel it was a detriment. So I would suggest look for it on an IMAX screen. But 2D is not just fine. It's probably preferable.
Agreed. Now, I was not Batman versus Superman's biggest fan. Mm-hmm. But I appreciated that it wasn't black and white. It had gray areas. They didn't advertise it Team Batman, Team Superman. You weren't supposed to choose sides. You're supposed to watch them figure it out. Not here. It's your Team Iron Man, your Team Captain America, black and white, choose a side. There's no middle ground. That got on my nerves. And it's interesting how the lines split between the Avengers. Oh, interesting. One side, five of them are over there, and five of them are over there, and that's just how they chose sides. And I think that's why I gravitated towards Scarlet Witch, played by Elizabeth Olsen, and Black Widow. That's mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson. they actually almost find a middle ground. Those are the ones that are waffling. It actually makes them the more interesting characters. Otherwise, you're just like War Machine, Don Cheadle, and Falcon, Anthony Mackie. They're like, well, of course we know what side you're going to go on because, you know, they're your buddies. It just fell weird.
Well, I think you were buying too much into what the marketing people were trying to do. And so the whole Team Iron Man versus Team Cap, as they were promoting it, really is a marketing gimmick. And anyone who knows the Avengers movies will know that in the end, there is no choosing sides and there is middle ground. I declared myself Team Switzerland because I felt an equal draw to both of these characters. And I understood what was dividing them. But you knew that in the end, also not a spoiler, they will find some common ground.
It's a halfway spoiler.
But it's not a spoiler because there will be another Avengers movie.
There's going to be a lot more.
And as we always know, you wait until the very, very end of the credits because there will always be a bonus scene.
I think there's two this time.
There's two.
So yeah, there's still Infinity War Part 1, Infinity War Part 2. There's another Thor coming up. The very next Marvel movie, by the way, is a new one, Doctor Strange. And,
I understand.
I'm marveled out, Hannah.
I understand the marvel out, you know, illness that is falling upon you. However, if it wasn't good, then that would be another story. But the fact that they can kind of keep the bar as high as they have been is a pretty remarkable feat. And so I think it deserves some extra credit for the fact that it really is meeting expectations. And believe me, those people are not fans that would forgive a really bad story or bad performances or really bad dialogue. And this movie, yes, they all start running together, and I couldn't begin to tell you the individual backstories or where the comics go and the people who know the mythology in it inside and out. All I know is that when I see these guys connected and collected together on the big screen, there's a 90, what's it, Rotten Tomatoes?
92.
There's a 92% chance that I'm going to like it.
Now, everyone agrees, and I agree with them. This is better than Avengers Age of Ultron, the one that came out last year, where Iron Man, Tony Stark accidentally creates the villain. Maybe that's why he's so guilty, because he tore up, what was it, Sarkovia or whatever it was, all because they told him, hey, Tony, don't do this science experiment. No, I'm going to do the science experiment because I'm a rogue, I'm a rebel, you know? Yeah. And so I'm glad he feels guilty. Well, it's his fault. And that he changes his mind about the whole law thing because of a 5-second cameo by Alfre Woodard. It's Alfre Woodard standing in the hallway saying, hey, you know, for 5 seconds.
That's true. That is a little odd and kind of an underuse. Maybe she was left on the cutting room floor. Maybe she came back originally during the shooting. But some of that is a bit contrived. But again, it doesn't matter if you're going to just accept it for what it is and enjoy the ride.
All right. I will accept it for what it is. I guess we're starting to beat a dead Marvel, but I just want to leave it with, you brought it up, the one dimensionality of it. Hawkeye, War Machine, Falcon, Ant-Man.
I forgot about Ant-Man.
They're nothing. They're there just to be there. They each get their funny one-liners. They are nothing.
This is by far the best movie that we've seen so far this year.
What?
What's better?
Kreisha.
No, I didn't see
Deadpool. Better than this.
Deadpool's, for the mainstream, Deadpool's not better. This is one that
Deadpool
is
breaking
PG-13.
Records right now on DVD.
I know, but more people can go and see. This is a good PG-13 movie.
It's the number one, Deadpool, like, R-rated movie of all time.
Deadpool is R, and this movie is just sheer entertainment, and I think by calling it one-dimensional or old or just kind of you're worn out on Marvel, I don't think the majority of people will be. And so I hope that they don't mistake one dimensional for not being worth seeing, because I think it's absolutely worth seeing for anyone who's enjoyed any of these other Marvel movies.
Well, if you're in that handful of people that don't do the superhero genre and you want to see something else this weekend in theaters, there is an option. It's called The Man Who Knew Infinity. You may remember it was briefly mentioned in the movie Good Will Hunting. Yeah, they're in the bar. Stellan Skarsgård, Robin Williams are in there fighting over Matt Damon. And Stellan Skarsgård says, did you ever hear of Ramanujan? He's this guy from India back in the teens, the 19-teens in World War I, and he was able to extrapolate these complex mathematical formulas from just a simple text. Never went to school. That is the man who knew infinity. Played by Dev Patel. He goes to Cambridge, studies with Jeremy Irons, and there's a lot of math, Hannah.
There is a lot of math, which is the part of the movie that just didn't quite grab me, because I'm not into math and theory and proofs and things like that. And you think that these Marvel movies all tend to seem similar. Well, these indies that are an unlikely friendship develops between blank and blank. And so in this case, it's the unlikely friendship that develops between this Cambridge professor played by Jeremy Irons and, this genius young kid from India played by Dev Patel, who most people actually know from Slumdog Millionaire and Best Exotic Marigold Hotels. It's amazing to me that he's only 26 years old, because I think he's still got a very long career in front of him. But this movie really is about the unlikely friendship that forms between them when the Jeremy Irons character basically brings Ramanujan to Cambridge to try and develop his math skills and to make sure that he's able to kind of do the proofs and things necessary to show that his math isn't just a fluke. And he's a fish out of water there at Cambridge, and it's a tough road. And so it's got the typical indie story about whether the friendship will prevail and whether he's going to be, just sort of shunned by the folks back in India as well as the folks at Cambridge. And so it's an interesting story. It's based on a true story, which is always fun, but it does have a bit of a limited audience appeal.
Yeah, it's certainly a true story. There was a Ramanujan. He did go from Madras, India, to Cambridge, and it fits in. I lived in Cambridge for a couple years, so I tend to really pay attention to movies filmed there, and it really is filmed at Trinity College, and it's about the same time as, I don't know if last year if you saw Testament of Youth, takes place right there at World War I. That movie was about Oxford and everyone who dies from there, but close to Cambridge. And it takes place actually just before Chariots of Fire, if you remember that movie.
I remember that one.
You mentioned Dev Patel, Slumdog Millionaire, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He's from London, and all he does is play guys from India.
Yeah. Well, his parents, I think, British, are Indian. But I think his parents, are of Indian descent, even though he was born in, or Kenyan descent, too. Born in London. And Jeremy Irons, is always fun to watch. And so I think what raises this movie to a slightly higher level than a lot of other indies that might not otherwise gain traction is the fact that you have this very strong cast.
It is, it's not a buddy comedy at all. Mm-mm. It's oil and water trying to come together. There's a very heavy-handed sub-theme of anti-Indian prejudice. Mm-hmm. They do not treat Ramanujan very well. Not his classmates. Jeremy Irons doesn't. He really doesn't. And not because he's prejudiced, but because he just lacks the social skills.
Right.
This guy was born and bred in boarding school and never left the college grounds. He does not know how to talk to people. And that hurts Ramanujan, I believe. At least the movie tells you that.
Yeah, and there's a very strange kind of subplot too with the with Ramanujan's young wife, who he leaves back at home, who is waiting to join him in Cambridge or hoping to join him in Cambridge, but his mother kind of sabotages that whole plan. And I read actually somewhere that in reality his wife was like 13 or 14 years old when he left her.
She looks pretty young.
And so they didn't make that character that young, but it was definitely sort of an arranged marriage, but where they really did have an affection and love for each other. But that storyline was never really, it never had a chance to develop, mostly because it was just they were in two different places through most of the movie.
Yeah, it could not develop because they were not together. So you really see the relationship develop by letter or lack of letter.
Right.
And I think it was only there to show you that he chose math over marriage. Like, he had to do math. He had no choice. And I think that leads me to the strongest part of The Man Who Knew Infinity. It's how Ramanujan, Dev Patel, and Jeremy Irons approach math differently. Jeremy Irons is about the proofs. Write it down, prove it to me. I don't care that you can come up with a formula. Show me the steps, how you got there, and prove it to me. Ramanujan isn't like that. He says he receives his math, these formulas, his inspiration directly from God. I don't know which one of them. And he says it comes in dreams. It comes when he prays and just comes to the tip of his tongue and he writes it down. He doesn't know how to prove it. He just knows that the formulas are correct because God gave it to him. And you see these scenes early on in Madras where he's in the temple and he's bowing before this big statue and he's writing out math formulas on the floor in chalk. The movie, I think, very well scores a point. It shows you they can't work together because they can't figure each other out. Jeremy Irons is just like, sit down and write it out. And Dev Patel's like, that's not how it works, dude.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, Jeremy Irons' character is the only one who recognizes the sheer genius in this and trusts what he's producing. He just wants to see the proof, you know, to actually, it's like the proof is in the pudding. He's like, you got to give me the proofs, otherwise nobody is going to buy into your formulas. And so he is his biggest supporter. And I think that's really what the heart of the movie goes to. But then it's not a light movie. It's not a fun movie. It's an interesting story. I think people who, you know, something like A Beautiful Mind was much more accessible and mainstream. But again, for this one, if you're looking, of all the different indies that are out, and I'm sure, so we're about to hit some of the other ones this week, of all of the other choices, if you're not looking for a big blockbuster like a Captain America, then I do think The Man Who Knew Infinity certainly is an interesting one to seek out or to wait and rent down the line.
I'd wait. I mean, it's pretty vanilla.
It's vanilla.
It's but that's why it's right down the middle of the
road. That's probably why I like it a little more. Is that for an indie, for me, that's what makes it a little more accessible. And the other two that you forced me to watch were just horrifying.
Man, I can't wait to get it. All right, let's get into that one. There's one. I watched this movie and I immediately thought, I don't know if I should make Hannah watch this because I know your taste in film. And I knew this might actually physically hurt you.
My good taste in film.
There's a Danish film out this week. Starring Mads Mikkelsen. A lot of people know him. He's on TV as Hannibal. He was a Bond villain, Le Chief, the guy who bled out of his eyeballs, that guy.
And he's in your favorite Rihanna video, too.
I have a favorite Rihanna video.
He plays an accountant in whatever her song is that was in that movie. The song that she sang in First Monday in May.
Oh, Bitch Better Have My Money. He's in that
video?
He's
actually in this very explicit 7-minute long, because I read about it and then sought it out and watched it. And sure enough, he plays like this tied up accountant in this 7-minute, very explicit version of the video for that song. So now you have something else to look at. But so, anyway.
He's in it's straight out of Denmark. It's in Danish, so it's subtitled. And it's called Men and Chicken. And Men and Chicken it reminded me of The Island of Dr. Moreau. Everyone automatically thinks of Island of Dr. Moreau because of the subject matter. And it reminded me of a stupid movie from 1991 starring Chevy Chase and Demi Moore called Nothing But Trouble.
I don't think I saw that one.
Chevy Chase and Demi Moore, this married couple, they stumble on this weird house in the middle of nowhere and just the oddball people they run into. It reminded me of this. Mads Mikkelsen and his brother, I don't remember who plays his brother right now, their father dies. And they learn, well, he's not our father, and that we're only half-brothers now because we had different mothers. So they go to this really tiny island in southern Denmark, population 42, and they go to their house and they meet, what is it, three other half-brothers.
At least.
And they're all very strange in their own ways. They're all on the spectrum somewhere, and some of them just should be locked up. They're that off-kilter. And you wonder, what is going on with these guys? And it's it's a strange movie. Some people call it black humor, dark humor, off-kilter. It is nuts, Hannah.
It was weird. I figured out pretty early on that these people were somehow, like, crossbreeds. So to call it...
Careful.
I'm not giving... It's called Men and Chickens.
If
you see a movie poster, you see a guy and another guy with an egg head.
But that's misleading.
And it's called Men and Chicken, or originally Mend and Hans, which I believe is men and chicken in Dutch, perhaps.
Danish, Hannah.
Danish, I'm sorry. So I watched the first half hour because I kept trying to get into this movie. And then I stopped. And then the next day I tried picking it up again and I watched about 15 minutes. And then I went, why am I doing this to myself? And I skipped to the last 5 minutes and watched the end. And pretty much had figured out a lot of it. But it doesn't matter because nobody's going to like this movie, Charlie.
I didn't hate it. I certainly didn't like it, but I didn't hate it.
Well, okay, so you don't hate it, but why would anyone watch it?
It's so different.
It's different.
And so you can talk with your friends like, man, have you heard about this movie, Men and Chicken? Let me tell you about this movie.
Yes, I remember. I think you told me it was an originality is a breath of fresh air.
It was.
I was like thinking, I was
halfway in a good mood. Like, you know, that movie wasn't that good, but man, it was, I love when just something different hits me.
The idea that you can come out of Chicken and Hens or Men and Chicken in a good mood, yeah, and throw a wet blanket on Captain America, it's just beyond me, because I just don't even think they compare in terms of just an enjoyable movie watching experience.
I'm not comparing it to Captain America,
but you came out of there like a wet blanket and you're telling me that this one kind of was okay and this one was...
Well, I'd seen Captain America before and about three other Captain Americas and a couple Thors and a couple Iron Mans and, you know, a handful of Avengers. I've seen it before. Men and Chicken, I ain't never seen that before.
And there's a reason. There's a reason you've never seen it before. And all I can tell you is it makes the whole idea of crossbreeding and things like that, it makes the imprinting scenes in Twilight seem downright normal and natural.
They're not normal and natural about that. That's just weird.
Well, but that's just it. This whole thing even took that weirdness even a
step
further.
I have a guess on why you were so put off. Mads, each of the brothers, each of the five brothers has a problem, and they manifest it in different ways. And Mads Mikkelsen's probably the worst. He has, if he sees a woman, let alone talks to her, he has to, like, go behind a tree and pleasure himself.
Yeah.
If he's in the car for like more than 8 minutes, he has to tell the driver to pull over to the side of the road so he can get out and pleasure himself.
Yes.
Like, he has a problem.
He does have a problem.
A chronic, very chronic problem.
Which becomes obvious in like literally the first 2 minutes of this film.
And his ego is huge. So it's like, I get all the girls all the time. I can get any girl I want to. I can talk to girls. I'm like, you want girls? I'll get you girls. And he's like, he's never talked to a girl in his life.
No.
But he is so chauvinist and type A alpha male, but in this type Q omega body. It's fascinating at points.
Both the brothers, the idea is that they're both socially awkward in their own ways, and you come to learn why. Mm. Why they're all awkward, and they all are social outcasts for a reason. And this movie is just freaking weird, and I did not like it. I just did not understand how anybody would, one, conceive of this movie, and two, that somebody would actually fund it, and that a pretty big name Danish actor would actually even participate.
You know, good on him. I like people who try to break out of their confines.
I guess, you know, he just needed a break after the Rihanna video. But I don't know.
What shocks me the most is you, so collectively, you made about 45 minutes through that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you only made it about 2 minutes through the documentary that I didn't think you were going to watch anyway.
Was that a documentary?
It's called Francophonia. And it takes place, it's all about the Louvre in Paris. And it's by a guy, Sokurov is his name, he's a Russian. He's famous for, in 2002, he made an entire, like, 90-minute film shot in the Hermitage in one take. Like, 2,000 people were in it, and it was in one take, and it was all in the Hermitage. So I thought, oh, he's going to do the same thing in the Louvre. Okay, he didn't do the same thing. And I knew you're going to hate it, because it's a stream of consciousness.
Is that what it was?
And you hear stream of consciousness, and you think Terrence Malick, Knight of Cups.
Exactly.
And so I didn't think you were even going to turn it on. You watched 2 minutes of it. Good on
you. I did. I think I got, no, I got longer than two. I think I lasted about 5 minutes because the opening credits lasted at least three. This movie started with just this, like, laundry list of credits that were, I don't know, were they in Russian or French? And then there was...
He's speaking Russian.
They're speaking Russian, and I didn't even know it was a documentary. I couldn't even figure out...
Well, there was reenactments. And there was superimposed images on, and the whole thing with the ship is a metaphor. There was actually no ship.
Oh, Okay, yeah. And again, I just seen the horrifying Men and Chickens. Men and Chicken. And so I made a conscious decision 5 minutes into this one that I was not going to waste any more of my time, because I could not figure out if in the first 5 minutes you can't even tell what the movie is supposed to be, and I couldn't even tell if it was meant to be a documentary, and there was absolutely nothing to draw me in. I can't imagine that there are that many folks out there who would really get much out of this one.
You know, I think the title says it all. You need to be a Francophile if you're going to like Francophonia. I thought it was going to be about the Louvre.
So did I.
History of, and more importantly, things in it. And in a way it was. There are reenactors who play, and it takes place in World War II when the Nazis occupied Paris and took over the Louvre. They sent a guy named Metternich, a colonel, and say, all right, you're going to plunder all of the Louvre's art and you're going to ship it back up to Berlin. Well, before the Nazis invaded, they did a good job of hiding all of the art from the Louvre into various manors and estates. And the only thing that was left was like sculptures and busts and stuff. And the curator of the Louvre stayed behind. Jaujard was his name. And they start to collude. Jaujard and Metternich start to collude. The Nazi and the Frenchman saying, we don't plunder our art. You're a culture guy. You understand how important this is. And he's like, I do. And that's why he only lasts a couple years before he gets fired. So you see those reenactors learning to work with each other and trust each other. But then it gets, you didn't make it this far, it gets weird. You're looking at the Mona Lisa, right? And Napoleon walks in. And then a woman named Marianne, who represents fraternité, égalité, whatever, what's the other one?
Liberté,
fraternité, yeah. Égalité. Her name, so she's the physical manifestation of that. And they sit down in front of the Mona Lisa, and they're just talking about France. And Napoleon points at the Mona Lisa and says, that is me. And they're like, okay, what? What?
Is Napoleon short?
And the director, he's in the movie. And he's talking to this ship captain. The captain, his ship, it's his tanker, and he's in a bad storm. And the tanker supposedly carries the world's art, and it's going to sink. And he's trying to tell you something about protecting art, or I don't know what he's trying to tell you. But there is no ship. It's a metaphor. And there's Napoleon, and there's reenactors, and there's like Nazi fighter planes flying through the Louvre superimposed. There's a bit of Vichy history in it. It's not a good doc. It is a documentary, and it's not good.
I can't even believe it's a documentary. It's pretty bad. I do not understand how it could be a documentary. And if you want to see just see a bad movie about Nazi looted art, then go see Monuments Men. At least it's got George Clooney in it.
Monuments Men was better, and Monuments Men stinks.
Exactly. So why in the world would anyone want to go see this movie? I do not know. And again, Russian and subtitles, and you can't figure out what it's supposed to be. And so the fact that I lasted 5 minutes was about 4 minutes and 49 seconds longer than it deserved to get.
I didn't think you were actually going to get into 30 seconds. I didn't think you were going
to
do it.
I'm telling you, it's because the opening credits lasted so long that I just was waiting for the movie itself to start just to figure out what it was going to be.
All right, well, finally,
I still don't know.
I saw another movie this week, and it's in Chinese. It's from China. It's got very famous Chinese actors in it if you're into Chinese film. It's called Phantom of the Theater. You think, oh, a Chinese remake of Phantom of the Opera. Nope. Nope, 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 nope. It's about a haunted theater. Okay, so far so good. And the beginning kind of sets you up where you're going to go. A homeless thief who steals this lady's purse, runs into the theater. The police don't chase him because it's haunted. And then all of a sudden he bursts into flames from the inside out. Internal combustion. He just starts on fire.
Wow.
And so a director shows up. He wrote the script. Takes place in theater. I'm going to shoot a horror movie in this haunted theater. Oh, how novel. And he's the son of a general, and the general had a hand in the death of 13 acrobats that died in that theater that now haunt that theater, the dead 13 acrobats.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, unexpectedly, a leading character will just start on fire and die. And it's got a connection to a movie I saw a couple years ago from 2011 called Detective D and the Phantom Flame. That also involved internal combustion. I think Detective D shows up in this very briefly. So it's got a connection to a very famous franchise of films that...
A franchise of films that only you have seen.
No, but there are people out there that are really into Chinese film. And, like, you know, every week here in D.C., there's, like, two Bollywood films that open.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they do really good business. Sometimes they crack like the top 10 in the country. Like you look at number 10 and you're like, what is that? It's like a Bollywood film. And so that, there's also Chinese films underground here that open up like every week, and this is one of them. And all right, it's not very good. I don't want to defend it. It's really not. It starts out as this supernatural mystery, and it morphs into tragic romance. If you're in a Chinese film, I guess that's okay. But there, other than that, there's really nothing to see in Phantom of the Theater.
And if it doesn't have a song like Music of the Night in it, then I have absolutely zero interest in seeing it. If it's not a musical, then I'm out. But I was intrigued enough to look it up because of the title. And then when I realized what it was about, I decided to opt out of that one. So that was all yours.
Yeah, we didn't. It's better than Francophonia.
Well, that's not too difficult to say.
Well, all right, we've covered the big blockbuster in theaters, a half decent indie, and 2 to 3 piles of crap. let's cleanse our palates. What's going on in the DVD market this week?
Well, this is one of those weeks where I just think that there isn't much to see beyond Captain America. And so if you're not a superhero genre fan and you're not a mathematician eager to see a movie like The Man Who Knew Infinity, then there are two movies out from earlier this year that really from the holiday season that, they were always okay as rentals. I would never have sent anyone to go see them in the theater. And they are Joy, which was the Jennifer Lawrence movie and also with Bradley Cooper, about the Miracle Mop lady and her journey from housewife to multimillionaire hawking her goods. And Jennifer Lawrence is decent. This movie was put out there award season, which was completely wrong. She was nominated, which was completely wrong.
That was a crime.
It was a total crime. But Joy is one of those movies that, I think is a harmless movie that some people who might have been interested and missed it in the theater because it did come out when there were so many other big movies out. Then Joy, I think, makes for a fine rental. And then for the young adult crowd, because other than Captain America, there's certainly nothing else for them out right now. The Fifth Wave, which I remember we both saw and was completely cheesy.
Garbage.
But, with kids saving humanity. But again, it was one of those weak January offerings that I think works fine for a rental.
You hated that movie.
I did pretty much hate it, but I think that if there are young adults who are just looking for something to rent,
find anything else.
I don't know that anyone who has already seen
there are other movies out there.
But if they've seen all the Hunger Games movies and they've seen all the Insurgent movies and they're just looking for some other,
then expand your horizons and go anywhere else.
But I'm just saying, if they're not the types to expand their horizons and they're just looking for,
you hated. I can't believe you're telling people to rent this movie. You hated this movie.
I'm not telling most people to rent it. I'm just telling the young adult crowd who might not have anything else to go see. Who's looking through that list of what's on. And this happens all the time. People are always just looking down the list of what's new on DVD. And I'll get people like just texting me or emailing me, should I choose this one, or this one?
And neither is an acceptable answer.
And you never, but they don't want neither. They're going to rent one. And so I'm just saying that if you are part of that young adult crowd that is looking for that movie that features, what's her name?
Chloe Grace Moretz
and some eye candy, then that's your only choice in terms of the
new releases. She was in Laggies. Tell them to watch Laggies.
Either they've already seen Laggies.
No one's seen Laggies.
No one's seen Laggies. Exactly. I am here to kind of give them the more mainstream approach to what they might have missed.
Revisionist history on Joy. I did not like Joy when I saw it. And I actually like it even less now that I think about it. That movie's, Robert De Niro's in it. What a waste. That movie stinks.
The movie is not good at all. But
and you're telling people, if you need something to rent.
Telling them if they're looking down a list and they're wondering about these two movies that are now on the new releases list.
You know what's new release? Son of Saul. Go see Son of Saul.
Oh, but that's so depressing.
So is The Fifth Wave.
The Fifth Wave is not depressing. No, see, Son of Saul is that oppressive choice for people who are just looking for the indie downer.
But it's actually a good movie.
Oh, I don't know. The jury's out on that one.
It won an Oscar.
Well, and it is Holocaust Remembrance Day just passed, so I suppose if you're going to have to pick a movie that works with the theme of the week, sure. But no, I think Joy is harmless to watch at this point on TV. I would never have sent somebody to pay for it in the theater, but if you can rent it for $5 and you're just, again, you're just looking for something that you might have missed that you were interested in seeing, it's not a good movie, but there are worse movies out there too. I think it's 100 times Men and Chicken, no Joy. No Joy in that movie.
You know what?
The Fifth Wave.
You're supposed yourself once a day?
I want The Fifth Wave to just come and eradicate all these other indies that you're making me see because they are
You see that. I did not make you see Men and Chicken or Francophonia. And you didn't watch Francophonia anyway.
I didn't watch Francophonia. But they're just not fun.
All right. Well, to wrap up, Captain America, Civil War. It's the wrong title. It's an Avengers movie. And it's like it's every other Avengers movie you've ever seen.
Go and enjoy it. It's a fun ride.
Don't see it in 3D.
That's right. Save yourself the $3, but definitely see it on a big screen with fun people. Fun people.
The man who knew infinity, fun math.
It's not even a fun one. It's an interesting, based on a true story, decent performances, but...
If you've been to Cambridge, okay, you go watch it. Yeah. You can see everything again.
And if you like Dev Patel, you'll just sort of see that he's a good actor with a good future, but not a very mainstream appeal flick either.
Men and Chicken. In Danish, Mads Mikkelsen, crazy.
Crazy. You'd be an egghead to go check this one out. Well, it's not even worth it.
We'll lean forward on that one. Francophonia. I like documentaries. I like documentaries in French. And even I hated this thing.
I say just, you know, go stare at the Mona Lisa for an hour or two, and that'll be more entertaining.
You know you've stared at the Mona Lisa too long if Napoleon shows up and points, that is me.
Go see Monuments Men and just realize just...
And don't... Hannah brought up two things that are now out on DVD. Don't even listen to her. She's just... talking about things that are new. They're not good. She knows they're not good. She's just talking about them.
They're not good, but there's way worse out there. So I think some people enjoyed Joy. I was surprised at how many people told me they actually kind of liked it. So if you're a Home Shopping Network or QVC aficionado, then you may enjoy this movie.
Go see Jennifer Lawrence in her first breakout movie. She was Oscar nominated for it, Winter's Bone.
Winter's Bone was excellent.
No one's seen that except for, you know, film critics.
I actually saw that.
So go see that one.
Winter's Bone is good, but again, it's sort of oppressive and depressing. And
why do you always have to feel good at a movie?
I'm just trying to give people a heads up that if they're looking to feel good about a movie,
and that
is
a good ending.
They should,
like, she comes out stronger in the end.
Oh. Yeah, after some major brutal things happening to her.
You know what? She gets crapped on in Joy, too. Like, remember how the biggest problem with that was that everyone's so mean to her, especially her family? Like, that's not a good feeling movie.
Okay, but Miracle Mop sold millions and millions of product. So I would say if you've bought a Miracle Mop or you've bought Huggable Hangers or any of the other line
still
of
don't
Joy
see this
Mangano,
movie.
Huh. Then I think you are the type who might actually...
Wait, you just told people go see a movie because you bought a product?
Yes.
What?
Because they are the ones who are going to latch on to the story of Joy Mangano's rise. And it's one of those living the American dream kind of thing. So the movie is bad, but the story itself has a certain resonance with people who may be Home Shopping Network and QVC addicts.
Well, we had been unfortunately agreeable in a couple weeks, so here we are, folks, back to the Cinema Clash. I'm just looking at my co-host tonight in bafflement. I do not understand you as a human being.
And that is the joy in my existence.
Oh, man.
But thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.